Doria, you sound like you're at a light rave.
Is it really loud in the background, really?
I don't know, really loud. Just sounds like you're having a good time.
I'll try to make that not the case. It's difficult. I'm between living arrangements right now.
Are you on the streets?
I'm on the streets. Yeah.
Wow. Keynote really needs to provide for its devs better.
Well, we're certainly incentivized to do a good job.
Yeah, that's otherwise, right.
Otherwise, I stay on the street.
This is what happens.
We'll let you back into the apartment tonight if you produce 1,000 lines of code.
Thanks, man. But you know what? You should really be doing that if I can delete 1,000 lines of code productively.
Yeah.
That's the real good achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We ready to go for this? I mean, your banter is top notch. Don't get me wrong.
It's what the people come here for.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're recording, right? So let's just start.
Okay. So welcome everyone to our second keynote space. Last week we talked about building Keynote over the last 6 months or so. Today we're joined by Basile, Sportif, Doria, and for the first time, our Keynote developer Goldfinger is here. I haven't heard him speak yet. Can you speak?
Hello.
Oh, there he is. All right. So today we're talking about the App Store and on-chain package management. So I'll just get into it, I guess. So let's imagine that I have this really amazing package that I want to share with the world. Like, I have a great package and I want people to enjoy it. So like, I'm getting lots of claps from Doria. So App Store and on-chain package management, what is on-chain package management? Why do I need like the chain to share my package with people? Why do I need to do this?
All right, well, maybe I'll put down some ground rules. One is no more insinuations. Two is that like we're going to use the terms App Store and Package Manager interchangeably, because in all ways relevant to us, they're the same thing, right? This is a tool that lets you share software, right, over a peer-to-peer network. I'll let Goldfinger get into the architecture a little bit, but basically what we've designed is a global state that's obviously on-chain that lets people publish these packages and then lets other people choose whether or not to download, install, review, comment on, fork, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that's the project that we've been working on for the past really just week and a half. And we've made really good progress. We have it working end to end now with a smart contract and a back end that runs on your node and a front end that is, you know, user friendly. So there's a lot of work left to do, but the core architecture is complete.
Goldfinger, are you going to talk about it?
Sure. Yeah. So on chain, what we're storing is just a little bit of information based on the package name, the node ID that is the publisher, the URL where you can find like the metadata, and then like the metadata hash for all that stuff. So you can verify that you're getting the correct information, the correct code hash, and that you can't basically spoof a package. I think like the really interesting thing about this is basically the whole contract is designed to be like very composable with other pieces of, you know, infrastructure off chain or on chain. And so, you know, the owner of the package is just an address. And so the owner of that thing, of the package that like, you know, decides when the metadata is updated, like when a new version is released, you can use all the existing infrastructure. So like a DAO or a multisig, or just a normally like a normal external account are all valid things. But then like we went even further than that, and then we made these the ownership of that software and like what gives you the right to update that software. We made that into an NFT. So then if you wrote a protocol that somehow like generates a lot of network effects and like that name that you've claimed is very has a lot of value. You can then leverage all the existing NFT marketplaces to sell the rights to that software. And so this isn't an NFT that represents the ownership of the software, like a download of the software, but it represents the right to change that software over time, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, hot take. Software does change over time. any good piece of software is going to evolve over time. So it's very important to have strong governance and pathways to do so.
Yeah, the nice thing is that that is all like completely modular and up to the owner of the software. So if you want it to be like, you know, an authoritarian dictatorship where one guy, one externally owned account manages the software, that works. If you want, you know, some more democratic structure, you can just plug in whatever DAO, infrastructure that you want.
Yeah, it's really nice. Composability. It's very cool.
All right, so talk about, please, if you will, what was it like to build this thing?
Yeah, super interesting, actually, because it's one of the first proofs of concept of this whole system we're building, right? Something that we've been questing for years is like this really clean and approachable app development framework or system that cleanly integrates off-chain and on-chain work. And the on-chain part of this system has been under development for like more than 10 years, right? There's a number of projects that have put a lot of time into on-chain development. It's never been really cleanly attached to an off-chain development area, particularly for back-end. Front-end is another thing. Front-end has been, you know, the source of, you know, most quote-unquote on-chain apps connecting to the off-chain world, but we're more thinking about the back end. So building the app store, which again we started fresh basically like last week. I mean, we had the package manager on the node part because we were installing and uninstalling software locally, but the online part is completely different. It went really fast because we're just leveraging the existing ETH contract development tooling, which is actually really good now. Goldfinger can talk about that. And then as for the back end, Keynote has an ETH subscriber provider system built in. So from the app's perspective, you're just calling out, you're sending a message because we have a message passing architecture as the kernel. You're just passing a message to the ETH provider, asking it to start telling you about a specific contract. And we're using the Alloy tooling, which is, you know, being constructed right now to build like really strong ETH to Rust data structures, essentially. And Goldfinger, talk about how that's been using that stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, as far as like contract development, there isn't a whole lot to say. It's just, you know, the tooling is there and it's really great. I guess the main interesting thing is like, you know, what how heavily does this relate to the sort of like KNS system, like having all like the PKI on chain, and like how do you access that? And so basically what the patterns that we're seeing is that there are either sometimes what you want to do is you want to associate a transaction and ensure that has been put out by a particular KNS ID. And so like if you want to publish a package using the App Store, what you need to do is you need to send that transaction from the same account as the holder of the KNS ID. Or in the future, we could add functionality that like you need a signature from that person to publish on their behalf or something like that. But that's one pattern. And then separately, there's like another pattern where sometimes you can have a looser association between like the KNS system and other like on-chain attestations. And so, you know, if for example, you have some sort of like DAO that is managing like the metadata for like an NFT, and you can kind of just kind of trust those people that like, hey, we're gonna tell you where the data is located. Just because if the DAO does the wrong thing, then the protocol that they're building just kind of breaks down, you actually don't even need to like link them that heavily. You can kind of just like trust that, hey, we're going to tell you where it is correctly. And if we don't, then that's, you know, whatever. We have no incentive to do that to begin with. On-chain, like those are like the two different ways that you can kind of interact with our PKI. Basically just trust us, bro, which surprisingly works in a lot of cases, or just, you know, put in like a minimum amount of like verification work to ensure that, you know, a transaction was sent by a particular KNS ID.
Oh, and by the way, you know, speaking of the KNS system, there's some pretty cool new identity projects coming out, like, you know, clusters.xyz is like launching and designing a new sort of like cross-chain identity system. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. It's an interesting project. But one of the main architectural concerns of the KNS system was to be agnostic to that kind of thing. So we can integrate like domains that are just attestations from an identity in another system. So if you have an ENS name, you can use that to run your software publishing DAO. If you have a Lens name, you can use that, because we're going to have top-level domain registrars that are just, you know, not bridges, but attestation systems from those other identity systems. And I expect that to be very, very common.
All right. Before I continue, does anybody have any questions? If you do have any questions, you can always just raise your hand and I'll unmute you and give you speaker privileges. Otherwise, I'll move on to the next thing.
What's next, Josh?
Sorry, I had a headphone situation there. Yeah, so what abilities does the App Store on-chain package manager have that we might want to run through that we haven't already?
You know, I think the name is very evocative. Basically, you've got a global store of existing packages. If you own one of those packages on-chain, you can update it. If you don't, you can download it, you can install it, and everything's set up in order to enable like modular stuff on top, like a review system or an audit system. So what that would look like is, you know, posting some data that's associated with a particular package on chain that could be text data or a metadata hash that would point to an audit. And, you know, depending on your identity, when you post that, that could be, people could care about that or not care about that.
Can you compare this to any other systems in, let's say, sort of like trad development or Web3 or like decentralized computing, and say, and basically say how it's like something in one of those systems, or alternatively, like why the, like how those systems are missing this piece?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm always motivated by like the most consumer friendly version of the thing, because it's like, that's, If you're in crypto and you want to, you know, achieve adoption, that's kind of what you should be aiming for. So if you look at like, you know, what the iOS App Store did for developers, is that it just sort of like gave them a target where if you could just sort of like build an app and then throw it on there, and then with really minimal like marketing, which is of course something that developers hate doing, you can actually get people to use your software, you know. And so that's like, as I think that counts as part of DevEx, right? Is does your system have a way for
distribution?
Yeah, exactly. Distribution.
What do you think the iOS store, and I guess probably the Play Store, like does particularly well that's portable to this kind of context? Because obviously there's a lot of other things about it that people in this context might dislike. Let's not even say just decentralized computing, maybe even just in crypto. But what are the things you think that it does well and that need to be preserved?
So obviously, like, you can look at the UX and talk about, like, you know, it's got tags and searches and reviews, and these are, you know, really nice and important features that are, you know, just that's a lot of elbow grease. Like, we don't have that stuff yet, right? But the architecture supports it. But so the stuff we do have that's important, that's emulating those things, is basically just like the global state of it, right? Because you want everybody that's using the platform to be able to find and download the same packages. And they should be compatible with one another. Like, you as a user shouldn't really have to think about, like, oh, like, where did this person get their version of this app? Can I talk to them? Right? Stuff like that. So we needed, like, a global state. Now, the tricky part, right, that I think is sort of novel about our system is that, you know, nobody's combined, like, the sort of semi-curated, very, like, easy-to-use global state of a first-party, like, walled garden-style app store with permissionlessness, right? Like, that's those two things are very much at odds, right? So, like, anybody can post a package on chain, right? Anybody can do that. You know, you have to pay, like, a gas fee, right? You have to, like, have a KNS identity, right? You have to post a transaction, but that's permissionless, right? All of those things are unstoppable. So from there, you know, how do you stop this thing from being, like, a cesspool, right? From there, you have, like, peer-to-peer curation. So once you have that baseline global state that's actually very, like, simple and, like, low-tech, then you can layer stuff on top of that for curation purposes.
I think Timoth has a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, like, this is already touching on a lot of my kind of curiosities here, but I'm wondering, what is the user story going to be like at various points of development going forward? If I'm a new user, I just booted up my Keynode, and I want to install an app that my friend told me about. I think currently it's like there's a command you can run, but I guess you guys are going to move towards a UI, and maybe there's something where you have global state. And it's messy, but then later on you add curation or something. But, like, that for me would be, as a developer, the MVP that I'm looking for to ship something on the platform. It's like I can tell someone reasonably, like, go on this thing, click this button, type this in, and there's my app.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're shooting for. I mean, obviously, right now, if you install the binary, there's nothing to do, right? It's a development platform that hasn't been used yet. But we're hoping that changes with the release of the App Store. So the way it works, right, is that we have a binary, right? We have a runtime that acts as sort of the to-be-standardized OS, right, interface. On top of that, we have a distribution that we manage, and that, in fact, by the way, at Goldfinger, maybe you should mention this, is the way that we are going to distribute our baseline distribution is from, like, the Keynote DAO on this on-chain package manager, and so you'll be able to update and verify your version of, like, your distribution of your OS through this same system. So that's important. So we have system packages, essentially, and one of those system packages is this App Store package. This is all in user space. All of this is happening in user space. And so this App Store comes by default. If you download our distribution of this system, right, packaged in with the binary, other people can make different distributions. But if you install ours, you've got access to this App Store right off the bat. So you'll be able to, like, you know, click a link and open the app and from there go and download and install all this stuff. So it is actually very analogous to the Google Play Store for Android. It's analogous in the sense that this comes by default on your system. If you're a casual user, it's all you'll ever need. But it's also not baked in at the sort of operating system level like the iOS thing is, where you don't have to jailbreak or do something crazy to use an alternative package manager. You could just install a different user space application that does this as well, that's using maybe pointing at a different contract or something like that. I mean, that's actually not only possible, but very likely to happen, is people coming up with alternative ways to distribute software if they want to do something outside the sort of scope or confines of this package manager.
Okay, next person up is Vikram. Go ahead, Vikram.
Yeah, so I, Had a question regarding the kind of on-chain verification of code. Will you be able to verify the base system as well, or just the App Store?
Can you elaborate what you mean by verifying?
Yeah, you said that you will have, if I understood correctly, you'll have some sort of attestations on chain of like which code that will actually be run. Is that correct to begin with?
Yeah, so we post a content hash on chain. So
yeah.
it's very similar to like torrenting or mirroring, right? Like you
Yes.
Well, it is that, right? You basically what you do is you post a content hash on chain and then you post a list of mirrors that are Keynode identities that you can download that content from. And then you try to download it and you check what you've downloaded against that hash, and then you unzip it or decompress it and then install it through a standardized pathway.
And is that just for apps within the system or for the system itself?
That's for apps within the system.
Okay.
And that includes the sort of system packages that we package with our distribution.
Yeah, right.
So,
yes.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, there's also like a binary hash of like the runtime, I guess, but that's sort of a different problem, right?
Yeah. How is it a different problem?
Just because you're not going to be distributing the runtime binary through this system, because you need to be inside the system to use the system. So we'll probably, as we sort of decentralize, obviously, this is a highly centralized operation right now. We've got, a team of people that all work together on this software, but, it's definitely an explicit goal to change that as we move forward and govern that the protocol itself, and at that point we would have like a bespoke system for publishing software updates on chain.
Makes sense.
Probably on chain, yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, anybody wants to request to speak, go ahead and do that. Goldfinger, did you have anything to say? Because we didn't, your name got said, but he didn't really respond. Kind of cut you off with Wickram there.
No, I don't think so. I guess like one thing I'd want to say that hasn't been said yet is that basically that like, this sort of operation that we have with like, a lot of off-chain data is starting to make DAOs feel like much more real, because like on-chain, most DAOs are basically just governing contracts on-chain and not a lot else. And there's really only so much to do there. Like you may, like maybe you're like flipping some switch that like turns on a fee, or whatever, you're changing the way that like tokens are distributed via staking or whatever, but it's like not that interesting. But now that we have this like big off-chain thing, off-chain component of like distributing software, like a DAO is basically looking a lot like a traditional software corporation, where what you're doing is you're like the DAO is, governing the official release of the software, right? So like you're basically just attesting to like a small piece of data on-chain, but that relates to some actual software that people have to download that exists entirely off chain. And so like there's like a very like big opening up of possibilities that I'm starting to see that is exciting.
I think we should start talking about that more explicitly sometimes. Like what you're really saying is the same thing that like Doria was saying at the beginning of the call, which is that like until now the only systems have been front end plus chain, and that works if you kind of assume that on-chain transactions can completely take the place of back-end. But I don't think anyone serious now really thinks that. And so what we're talking about that this really is just like the base primitives that build a back-end to go with the front ends, to go with on-chain. And so it is this like, kind of three-piece system where you do want it to be as decentralized as possible. And I guess up to now, the modes have either been overly simple applications that only have front end plus chain, or what you do see a lot is the back. Like, I mean, I would probably say OpenSea is like an example of front end, centralized in how it's delivered, but a front end.
Hello, I'm having network problems.
Yeah, are people hearing me? I think I'm coming through.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. So front, like, so that's an example of like you have front end plus on chain plus a centralized back end. And all we're really talking, and there's a decent number of like centralized backend pieces. Honestly, a crypto exchange is basically chain plus centralized backend, and that's super valuable. And so all we're talking about here is like making it possible to make the backend less centralized and more, you know, decentralized or commoditized or even, you know, community owned as before, if it's like, you know, centralized. And that's why I think that Goldfinger is saying that DAOs start to become more real, because now the DAOs have a backend that's run by a company, or that requires like, you know, a whole company to do it. Now you can have like, you know, DAO owned backends, or commoditized backends, or decentralized. There's tons of variations in there. The notable thing about them is they're different from either no backend, which is an overly simple DAO app with just front end and on chain, or a very like, you know, overly centralized backend, which is just like, you know, someone else is like is running it for you, or you sort of have to be a large company and the economics don't make sense of running it. And I'm guessing also that's why I actually kind of want to ask him if there's anyone else who has a question, like I want to get to it, but I also wanted to sort of like ask Doria why this specific project is so important to it, because like you seem to care about this one a lot more than maybe I would have. I actually care about a lot of other aspects of decentralized computing and crypto more, and you were like very, very insistent on this one.
Yeah, I was and I am, because like I am at heart a user space app developer, right? Like I want to build programs that people are going to use, right, directly. And that feels really, really difficult with the crypto integration. And so obviously that's sort of the motivating force behind this whole project. But one of the key pieces of that is like what I was talking about earlier with, as a developer, like you need a publishing target, you know? If you finish your awesome app and then you want people to use it, like there needs to be a developer-friendly way to make that happen. I think it's very much a part of DevEx. As much a part as we talk about, you know, using like our messaging architecture to make, you know, sending requests and responses easy. It's the same category of thinking for me. Also, I mean,
cool. Yeah.
As with Goldfinger, I think governance is really cool. I agree completely that like it's the idea of pairing like intensive governance with on-chain protocols is kind of this weird, like, there's a mismatch, right? Because the whole point, well, in many cases of an on-chain protocol is for it to be unstoppable and permissionless and in fact static, which is at odds, like as we've seen with a number of protocols that have done like a governance token, right? Like what is there for it to govern, right? Look at Uniswap with like the fee switch, you know, it's like the whole point of it is this sort of like mythical thing that can't actually ever get used. And so, as was said, now that we have off-chain software that can be governed on-chain, we're combining the two, like, you know, the things that actually need one another very much. Off-chain software does need governance because when you're managing a protocol, like, you do have to upgrade it over time and you have to apply changes over time because technology changes and people's needs change too. And if you want to stay relevant, you have to. Yeah. Anyway, that's that.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I would add to that, like the sort of like analogous thing would be like, imagine if you had to run a corporation where like you were like in a court every single time you had to make any sort of like decision, like you wouldn't be able to get that much done. And like that is basically like where DAOs are today. And if you were able to just like say like, okay, we're gonna do all this stuff privately, basically off chain, out of the court, and then every once in a while we'll settle to make things sort of official, then that's like a huge productivity gain.
Until like you have to take this in front of a California judge and she says that you can't do what it is that you wanted to do.
Delaware.
Yeah. Delaware, yeah, sorry.
Even, yeah.
Right.
And then you've got to move to Texas.
Crazy.
I can't think of any corporation that operates this way, except like maybe Congress, and like not even then, honestly. Like, you know, even Congress.
No, has, not like, at all.
Sort of off-chain.
They have a lot of, yeah, they have a lot of off-chain processes. They're actually like super prominent.
Right.
Humans don't like to operate that way. What do you think are some of the first like sort of apps or like simple like use cases that people will see based on that idea that you're like guessing? You don't even have to be building them, but I'm just wondering what you're sort of envisioning in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, like basically like any time that like a protocol is going to be like governed by, so, I mean, I would think something like storage would be pretty interesting, or just like compute markets, right? Because like you have this like on-chain, off-chain component of like, you know, everyone has to agree on like what software they're doing. They also have like, you know, you'd have like finances coming in of like revenue generating, like if you are selling storage or compute. That's sort of like an obvious one, like so obvious that it might not even be like that interesting. And then I guess this is like the first things that come to mind.
Makes sense. Yeah, I guess like when we're looking at like the metadata protocols for like NFTs and stuff, like you immediately get into like sort of, you know, selling storage or like implicitly selling storage by having that be part of the protocol. Yeah.
Right. And this is like a place where like sort of validiums come in, where it's like, okay, you want, like, because you're entering into this relationship with the person that is hosting the data, like you're kind of implicitly trusting them to like make the data available just by paying them, right? And so, you know, what the most secure thing that you could do is like build a whole roll up where like the data is available everywhere, it's super decentralized. But like in this case, you actually don't even need that. And so what you end up falling back to is like a Validium architecture, which is really like, it's like a pretty good use case for them, because like the relationship is such that like making all the data available would actually be like overkill, like that would be too expensive. And so you can actually get like really cheap roll-ups this way that actually like have the security guarantees that are like more or less like perfect for the situation.
All right, does anybody have any questions? Feel free to like request speaker access. I think we've gotten through all of our questions already.
I'm very excited, by the way, about a topic that we've discussed a lot as friends, Juristopia. That's another reason I'm so pumped about like package managers, is because it's like the primordial version of what could eventually become real governance applied to real corporate entities that do real things digitally, real digital things. Yeah.
All right. Anything?
I had a question.
Go ahead.
We talked about this before, Doria, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how people might monetize software on Keynote, and what role the App Store plays in that. I know that, like, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for free open source stuff, but obviously some people will want to use the system and make money in a more traditional way. So what are the different options and systems available?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, you can charge for software, of course. You know, you can charge for software that's published on chain by publishing a content hash but not sharing the content except through a channel of your choosing, right? That could be involving a crypto payment or a credit card payment, right? Or a cash payment or whatever. But more generally, if you're not paying for the download, which is a valid option, what's really exciting is the ability to create off-chain protocols that are revenue positive, much like on-chain protocols that are the same way. And the most common architecture that we've sketched out for something like that involves service providers operating on the network that are giving users some compute or some data or some tooling that they can then charge for through the protocol. And you can build into your protocol basically a financial model where revenue is applied to a group of token holders or something else. I mean, frankly, the issues become more like real world legal when you start having good ideas in this realm. But hopefully that's something that gets solved in parallel to this.
Okay, I think we lost Basile there.
Any thoughts there? Anybody else? I mean, this is a very nascent thing. This hasn't been figured out yet by anyone, so.
I guess one thing that comes to mind is like Vitalik's original thing where it's like, you know, I want my warlock sword or whatever in World of Warcraft, where it's like, oh, you know, I don't want Blizzard to be able to alter like or nerf that item. And like the problem that comes up is that like basically like if you have any sort of like centralized entity, then like, you know, that is hosting the metadata, then you basically have like the ownership of it is like permissionless in decentralized, but like the rest of it isn't, right? And so like to actually like represent like the hash of the software as like, oh, like this version is like the version where like the warlock sword is actually powerful, right? And like governing the process by which it changes in like a transparent way is actually getting much closer to the original problem that Ethereum, that inspired Ethereum.
Yeah, very much so. Interesting that hasn't been solved yet. And interesting that, you know, by the way, like just simple sovereignty does not solve that. You need a coordination mechanism that does involve some on-chain work. Because otherwise, there's no meaning to the sovereignty. You know, it's just a purely local instantiation. People really care about global state, you know.
Yeah, I do. I care very deeply about global state. Do we have any more questions? Anything that we didn't get through, or does anyone want to like raise their hand? Last chance, maybe. All right. Hopefully you guys still hear me.
Yeah. I'll be here.
All right. Well, in that case, thanks everyone for showing up. We have a Discord that you should come check out. The link is on our Twitter. And I think next week, we're certainly going to have a space next week. I think it's, what do we decide, on AI?
Yeah, I'll probably talk about Zen's work. In that direction, sharded inference.
Okay, so next week is a space on sharded inference. Come check out our Discord. That's where we do most of our talking. And Edgar, is there anything you want to say?
You guys are also handsome and smart. Glad you're here. Thanks everyone for talking.
All right. Until next week. Thank you everyone for showing up and listening.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
See everybody.
All right.